Hey there, good morning. Good morning. It's February 4th, 2020. 2020, of course, it is. And I hope you're in good form this morning. A Tuesday morning, a windy morning here in Salford. Very windy, very, very miserable, very wintry. Although we're about two-thirds of the way through the winter, aren't we? So it's not been too bad. It's been a mild winter. That's been put down to climate change, of course. Climate change is dominating the news agenda this morning. We'll talk about that in a minute, very briefly. I have to say that just in case you switch off. Very briefly. Don't even think about switching this off. This crap. And good morning to Maureen. Yesterday were very few quick good mornings. Morning, Maureen. How are you, Maureen? Sir Hubert, Mike Rowcock. How are you doing, Mike? Mike's boiler is on the blink. Jesus, Mike. You don't need your boiler on the blink in the winter. Make sure your engineer is certified, Mike. Go all Matt Allwright there. Get into the spirit of Matt Allwright from Rogue Traders. Be very careful when you call out anybody to have a look at your gas boiler. I hope you get that sorted, Mike. How are you, Charlotte, Martin, David Mitchell, Alex Jackson, Marcus, Anne Gladman? How you doing, Anne? To Dawn B, to Peter, to Martin, Ellen, Patricia Actis. How you doing, Patricia? Keith Skegwin. How you doing, Keith? Graham Hahn is in Flintshire. How you doing, mate? Good to be with you. Dick Scratcher. How you doing, Richard? Gunga Galunga. Fucking hell. Oh, yeah, Chris Davey in Manchester. Hey, listen, I'll make you a promise. You've said this before, you baldy bastard. I know I have. Shut up. I might say it again next year. This year, I'll organise some sort of a meet and greet in Manchester so that I can feel all famous and loved. No, not for that at all. But there are so many, obviously, there are so many listeners here in Salford and in Manchester. It'd be nice to... Well, to rock up some afternoon to some pub somewhere that's only got two staff on because they think it's going to be a really quiet afternoon, and about 50 of us will rock up and have a few beers. I'll organise that sometime this year. That'd be nice, wouldn't it? That'd be nice. Hi to Ronald Rocco. There you are. Right. Listen, just before we talk about the papers, sorry about yesterday afternoon, by the way. I was about an hour out from the radio show. I had a brilliant guest lined up, and then we had an extended family minor emergency to deal with, that we had to deal with. Nothing too serious, nothing that is too problematic, but it had to be dealt with yesterday, and that's why I cried off the radio show so late yesterday afternoon, which is very unlike me. So I'm sorry about that. I've rearranged my guest, Charlie Pixley, and he'll be on the show tomorrow. So there you are. All's well that ends well. Right. Listen, before I move on and talk about the... hi to Dimmy, who says, good morning, Baldy. Good morning, Dimmy, or Dimmy. Before we look at the papers, I just want to do this. I want to brag. No, I don't want to brag. I need to get some advertising revenue in this year. And I've neglected the advertising side of things. I haven't neglected it, let's be honest about it. A tiny few people who've worked in television and radio, only a tiny few, have any idea, have any semblance of an idea about the workload that I have on a weekly basis. It's ridiculous. It's madness what I have to do to keep the radio show on the road, not to mention this nonsense here, which, even though it is nonsense, has to be prepared. And Sunday View, it's ridiculous. In the media, there would be three or four people working on it. It's just me. It's horrendously difficult to do. But I love it, and I'm not complaining about it. So when I say I've neglected the advertising, I haven't. I just don't have the fucking time to be soliciting advertisement from people by sitting down and spending a lot of time researching alternative health or other alternative industries and soliciting from them their business. In other words, phoning people up and saying, you should advertise on the Richie Allen Radio. I can't do it. I don't have the time. And I'm not running any ads. I'm not. I run an ad for Mark because I wholeheartedly believe in Mark. It's a quid pro quo thing without there being any formal arrangement, because there doesn't need to be one, because Mark is a great champion of the independent media, number one, and a great champion of the Richie Allen Show, number two. And he's been very helpful over the years, sending money here and there, but also auctioning things. He's a great guy. So I run the ad because I believe in him. And some very important people to me have gone and spent time with Mark Bajerski, and it's changed their lives, and I believe that. But I don't have any advertising, and I need it. I need some advertising. And I sell advertising very cheap. I think I've run campaigns for a dozen people, all but one of them, all but one, said it was a resounding success for them because of the reach of the radio programme. Look, I'm going to show you a couple of screen grabs. We're February 4th today. This is just a little insight into the reach of the Richie Allen radio show for January of 2020, so last month, right? Now, what I want you to bear in mind here is what you are not seeing, because I'm going to talk about what you're not seeing. So Podomatic.com is where I upload the podcast of every single radio show. The figures on the bottom left and the bottom right hand side of the screen are plays, mobile plays and downloads. And for January on Podomatic alone, you've got over 170,000. Okay? That's mobile plays, plays and downloads. Over 170,000, right? Okay? 170,000. YouTube for January. Now, bear in mind, these figures are skewed. It's a lot more than YouTube is letting on, because this is how they shadow ban. They first of all make it difficult for people to find your program, but then they lie about the data. They misrepresent the data. So let's be conservative. YouTube tells me that there were 181,000 views, or listens, really, last month, with nearly 30,000 unique viewers. Let's be conservative and multiply that by two. That's 370,000 listens, and it's about 60,000 unique viewers. That's on YouTube alone. That's YouTube alone, right? So I've just showed you YouTube and Podomatic. What I haven't shown you is iTunes. What I haven't shown you is Spotify. And what I haven't shown you is the statistics for the TuneIn app. TuneIn.com is where most people in the world go to listen to radio online. The Richie Allen Show is on there, and we get tens of thousands of downloads there a day. And when the radio show is live at 5 o'clock, Monday to Thursday, we average, while I'm on air, per quarter hour, about 82,000 listeners. That's per quarter hour. I've never done this, but I'm doing it now. The Richie Allen Show is the most listened to independent real radio show on planet fucking Earth. There is nothing like it. Nobody is doing those numbers. Nobody. Radio show, remember. Completely independent, I am saying, remember. Not supporting the Republicans or the Democrats or Labour or the Tories. It is a phenomenon. And you made it possible because you support it. But your support is not enough. You've done as much as you can. I can't keep asking once a month for people to make contributions. You've done as much as you bloody can. I need advertising revenue. I've run a dozen campaigns. Only one of them was a failure. And that was because it wasn't an ideal thing to advertise on a programme like mine. But every other one was a resounding success. And I have the testimonials to back it up. So if you've got something to sell and it fits in, you know, with our audience, you think, get in touch with me through the website, richieallen.co.uk. Tell me, you big baldy Irish bastard, I want to advertise on your programme. That I will charge you a ridiculously fucking cheap fee to do so. And I will run you around twice a day, every day for a month, and you will sell your product. That's a fact. There is nothing like the Richie Allen. Fuck this pretending false modesty. Fuck this aw shucks. There is nothing like it on planet Earth. Nothing like it. Listen to Jordan Maxwell. Come on your show, Richie. I get absolutely inundated with messages. It's not just him, it's everybody. And I've just given you a tiny flavour of the reach there. So if you've got something to flog, I'll flog it for you. And I got to say this, and I'm not virtue signalling. Listen, I'm telling you this because it might save us a bit of time. I swear to God I'm not virtue signalling. Listen to me now. I was offered a lot of money before Christmas by a lovely man in Boston who came to me through Podomatic, and he wanted me to endorse a product of his. It's a tea. I said, I can't do that. I said, I'll run an ad for you and we'll make the ad sound lovely. We'll do it properly. We'll get it professionally done through the company which does the ads, not just for me, but for everybody else. And he said, no, Rich, I want you to personally endorse it. That's the way things are going now. And I said, I know that's the way things are going. That's on trend. On trend is for the presenter to look down the microphone or look down the camera and say, this is great stuff. I've used it. But I can't fucking do that. I have many faults. The BBG is a genuine, ignorant, big, baldy gammon bollocks. Ask my missus. Curmudgeonly, petulant. I am a prick at the best of times. But I'm no fraud. And I cannot say to you ever, use this because I use it. And I'll tell you something else. If I used a product and I found it to be very good, I still wouldn't fucking tell you. Because why should you trust me? It is wrong for any journalist, for any presenter to endorse anything around health or supplements or anything like that at all. So my would-be client was very understanding of it. And he said, well, we'll part company because I'm only interested in the profile of the presenter and the presenter endorsing the product. I can't fucking do it. He said, even if it works. I said, even if it works, I can't do it. So get to me through the website. If you've got something, if you've got a business, and I'll charge you a fraction of what you will be charged by anybody else, and I'll give you an audience. All right. What are you all fucking laughing at there? I see all these smiley faces on the fucking chat. I'm in sweary form this morning. Hey, listen, Joe Boddington. Jesus Christ, Joe, thanks so much for your support. I've been suggesting meeting Joe Boddington, a musician of great aplomb who lives in Chorlton, which is only around the corner. We've been planning to meet for a cup of tea or a beer for fucking 3 years now. Let's do it, Joe. The beer is on me. Let's do it some Saturday or Sunday. Let's go and get pissed right up in Chorlton. Thanks, Joe, for your support and for listening to the programme for as long as you have. I like Joe. Joe is my preferred listener. She disagrees with my personal opinion on many occasions and doesn't like some of the things that are said on the programme, but listens anyway. That's how it ought to be, right? That's how it ought to be. So listen, look back at what I've said there and what I've showed you. It's not bragging. It's not bragging because it doesn't matter. I don't fucking matter. I'm not important at all. I never was, never will be. But the platform is important. It has an enormous global listenership now. It is fucking beyond anything I could have ever imagined. And it's time now that if you've got something to sell, that you came to me and we do a deal and you win and the program wins. And then I don't have to every month do that which I fucking detest, which is ask my listeners for money. Okay? That being said, if you listen all the time and you do have the means, do support it because it's worth supporting. It really is, you know? There you are. All right, I'll shut my cake hole now. Do you want to have a look at The Guardian then? Remember, you just saw Podomatic on YouTube. It's a 500,000 a month right there. Without the live show, without Spotify, without iTunes, without the TuneIn app, without Fab Radio 2's numbers. Huge. And I take no pleasure in that. You know, I'm huge. I'm not fucking huge. I can't get recognised in my own fucking house. It's not about that. It's about the professionalism of the show, how it sounds, the guests that come on. That's what it's about. So The Guardian then. Emergency terror law announced to halt early release of offenders. I've forgotten this guy's name already, this guy who was shot dead on Sunday. That's because I'm so fucking tired chasing a golden retriever dog up and down the fucking stairs, in and out of the kitchen, socks hanging out of her fucking mouth, duvet covers, my underpants. I'm knackered, right? So I'm tired. I can't remember the guy's name. These are the proposals to deal with the early release of jihadis. Jihadi daddies. Some of them are daddies. Who might go on the rampage. Journalists walk out of number 10 over exclusions. This is interesting. We'll come back to that. But yes, the attack on Sunday is still dominating the news agenda. Tuesday morning. 9:45, whatever. Right. The Star or the Mirror. Which one is it? The Mirror. It's the Mirror. The Mirror says that there are 20 jihadis on the loose in the UK. Let's make a fucking game show out of it. Let's make a Channel 4 game show out of it. Let's fucking jihadi hunt. Let's call it jihadi hunt. Everybody get involved. It'll be like Stephen King's The Running Man. The novella, the little book Stephen King brought out in the 70s. Let's go and fucking bag a jihadi. Just give us their names and their photographs. These 20 guys that were released early that are believed to be dangerous. Let's go on and hunt them down. Hunt them down like dogs in the street, like Dog the Bounty Hunter. And then there's a big prize then at the end of it all for the person who gets the most jihadis. Crazy stuff this. So apparently there are 20 seriously crazy bastards on the loose. And that story's in the Mirror, mirror.co.uk. Yeah, I'm tired, I told you. Mirror.co.uk. Yeah, that's it. If you want to read that stuff, jihadi daddies. They're everywhere. Right, so Boris Johnson, the Prime Minister, has said, we're going to take this on. Priti Patel, the Home Secretary, we're going to take this on. We're going to take it on. You know, the fact that people are released after serving half their sentences. Dangerous. What I found interesting about Sunday's attacker, what's his name? What's his fucking name, this guy? I can't remember his name. Is that there seems to be a contradiction, or there seems to be a disagreement between terrorist experts. Sky News, BBC and LBC and Talk Radio yesterday had counter-terrorism experts on, and they couldn't make up their minds whether Sunday's attacker was dangerous or not. What do you mean, Richie? Well, some of the people Sky News brought on said that the man was in prison for a very serious offence. Now, he was sentenced to 3 years and 8 months in jail. Other commentators said that the offence that he was in prison for wasn't that serious. They couldn't make their fucking minds up. It seems that he was viewing banned materials online, or he was in possession of banned materials that he had found online. There seems to be a difference between viewing the banned materials, which is me going online and looking at some head-chopping videos, or downloading those to my hard drive. Either way, the experts can't make their fucking minds up, which it is, right? Anyway. That's The Guardian. The Metro. Play Call of Duty in real life. This is an allegation that the jihadi talked about amongst his pals playing Call of Duty in real life, running around killing people, like the video game. I don't know if people are on television and radio this morning now talking about the video games, but some of the video games that youngsters are playing, well, they are incredibly violent. Now, I know my pal Hayden Hewitt, he would take umbrage, he would take issue with this notion. Hayden was very much involved many moons ago in the video nasty row. Let's ban video nasties. Let's ban Child's Play. 3 or 2, was it? Was it the second film? It was the second film. Because of the murder of young Jamie Bulger. That was successful, that campaign. Child's Play 2 was banned. I also, like Hayden, found it preposterous, this idea that on its own, the violent horror film could have such an impact on a young boy or young boys that they would murder a 3-year-old by a railway line. There had to be other factors, right, at play. That being said, the video games today are, well, they're incredibly violent and graphic. You know, the kill scenes in these videos are horrifically graphic and violent. And maybe you couldn't make an argument, maybe it's very difficult to make an argument that those video games could make children violent. That might be a difficult argument to make, but an easier argument to make might be that there is a desensitization program underway, that exposure to such video games and violent films and violent pornography is desensitizing youngsters to pain, to the pain of others, to graphic violence. And that, of course, has very serious implications for people going forward. You know, in terms of empathy then disappears. And you kind of have a kind of a collective kind of sociopathy. You know, an inability to experience concern and worry and fear for others who might experience graphic violence or whatever. So maybe you can make an argument that way. But as to the video games being responsible for the knifings in London and all that, I don't believe that for a minute. The Times, jihadist told inmates he wanted to murder an MP. So all this is emerging now. The backstories generally do emerge. Guy goes mad, grabs a knife, tries to kill people. There are a lot of questions around that, which the media isn't asking. I won't dwell on them because I talked about them yesterday, so I won't bore you. But then you get the backstory. And the backstory is trickled to the public through the media in the 3 or 4 days after the event. You get these little, right moments. Right, yeah, okay, yeah. And this is an right moment. I see. Nobody corroborates any of this. So he told guys in jail he wanted to murder an MP. So the public goes, right, Jesus, yeah. He was a wrong one then. Right. Says who? A fucking convicted criminal? All right, yeah. Okay. Funny story in the Times as well. Universities are paying students thousands to delay their degree courses because they're oversubscribed. The mind boggles. Also, that story about journalists walking out in solidarity after some journalists, excuse me, and I believe it's a Daily Mirror and the iPaper, to name two, who would be very anti-Conservative Party, were not allowed to attend a briefing in Downing Street. We'll come back to that in a minute. So that's the Times today. The Mail. Team of 20 were tailing terror maniac. 20 people chasing this guy. There's a picture of him on the front page of The Mail as a young lad. Big happy head in him, playing in the street. Big innocent face on him. Yeah, don't forget The Mirror today running a story that 20 jihadis are on the loose. Round them up. Let's get a posse. Let's get a posse, goddammit. Burn them! The Mirror, same story. 20 danger jihadis on our streets. They couldn't fit in dangerous. 20 danger jihadis on our streets. And number of newspapers are going today with a story. This is going to be really petulant and childish of me, but I'm going to do it anyway. Because this crazy paradigm we live in, where people can rewrite history and where the media can paint a picture about somebody and present it to people, and people just swallow it. Rio Ferdinand is talking about, he's a former footballer who played for Manchester United, most famously Leeds and West Ham, in his early career. And his wife died of cancer, leaving him to raise their boys. But he was married again recently, and he has been used, or he has used the media to talk a lot about grief, dealing with his own personal grief and his own family grief. What annoys me about it, and I'm not spiteful, I don't have a spiteful bone in my body, was that Rio didn't have much respect for his wife when she was alive, because he was a serial womanizer. He shagged all a fucking round him while his wife was alive, but also while she was battling cancer. He's a dirty bastard, basically. But we forget about that when we make these pathos-filled fucking TV programmes about grief and about how lovely Rio is at raising his boys. And good luck to Rio now in his new relationship. I say to Rio's new wife, leopards don't change their fucking spots there. Hate that. I hate this reinvention bollocks, you know. Obscure, not just obscure, but just delete the facts, you know. No, no, no. No, he was a filthy fucking womanizer. And he was doing it to his wife when she was battling fucking terminal cancer. But let him go on TV as often as he wants, expressing how much he loved her and how grief-stricken he is. You should have been nice to her when she was alive there, son. There you are. I have a real bee in my bonnet about womanizers and cheating. Not that I'm a saint, you know, in terms of I'm not a saint in life. I've never cheated on my missus, never could, never would, never will. I'm not saying that I'm perfect in every other aspect of my life, but I hate fucking people sneaking around doing that. And then, you know, later on then claim, you know, professing undying love. Hang on a second, you know, the amount of times you were caught with your trousers down, behave, lad, behave, you know, behave. The Telegraph. Wave of terrorists due to be released. So there's a lot of them due to come out, apparently. Guys that were locked up for viewing terrorist materials online. Terror manuals. Terror videos. Or having such material in their possession. They're about to come out now. And there isn't anything the Prime Minister can do about it. Because he can't retrospectively or retroactively change the law. Just like that. And say, alright, we've got to end these... We've got to end this system whereby you leave prison having served half your sentence. He can't do anything about it. Not right now. Got to be an act of parliament, you see. So jihadis are coming out! More for us to chase in the great jihadi bagging bonanza. Channel 4, Wednesdays at 8 o'clock. Catch a jihadi. Send a cell phone, smartphone video of you and your captured jihadi back to the studio. We'll send the police around and you'll get your gold star. The Express. Hundreds of free jihadis. Jesus Christ almighty. It's the same shit everywhere. The iPaper. I took the Lord's name in vain again, did I? Banned. This is interesting. Journalists banned. Banned. From a briefing at number 10. What's this all about then? There's the Times story. Ugh. Yep. Yeah, so political journalists collectively together walked out of a briefing at number 10 yesterday because reporters from certain titles, as you can read there yourself, were banned from attending. Laura Koonsberg and Robert Peston and the political editors of national newspapers were among those who walked out of the briefing in solidarity with those who were excluded. And those who were excluded included the Daily Mirror, the Huffington Post, the Independent. Those would be, I suppose, Labour Party supporting publications. Or they were in the election cycle anyway. Don't forget, as it says here in the story, the government is still refusing to put up spokesmen and women on the Today Show on BBC Radio 4. Which is an extraordinary thing, really. And this, of course, isn't a surprise. And it isn't just one of those things. Everything is changing. The relationship between governments, between national politicians, as in members of the national parliament, and local politicians, your local representatives, your local councillors, the relationship between them and you is changing in a way and at the speed that would have been previously unimaginable. Talked about this on the radio show. I talked about this on this crappy show yesterday. I talked about it. the relationship. There wasn't a radio show yesterday. I talked about it on Sunday View. We first saw this during the US election campaign of 2016, when Donald Trump could exclude reporters from CNN and one or two other organizations from asking questions, and tried to prevent them from being present at rallies and at briefings. It resulted in some journalists being attacked by some of Trump's most fervent or ardent supporters. It's all changing. And we're seeing a copycat situation emerge here in the UK now, where the Johnson's government says, we're not going on the Today Show because they're biased. Now listen, listen, listen. Hold your fucking horses. You're not going to hear me defend the BBC or the Independent or the Guardian or the Huffington Post or the Daily Mirror. They're all dreadful. They don't do their jobs. But I've said it before and I'll say it again, the Guardian. And I'll say it 1,000 times. As bad as they are still our media. They are still our national media. Yes, we get our information from other sources these days. You listen to my radio show. You listen to lots of other independent radio and television shows, and that's a good thing. But as bad as the print media has become in this country, it is still our print media. And we must defend it before we do something about it, before we attempt to reform it, and before we attempt to make it do what it should do. We have to defend it against fucking tyrants like Boris Johnson. It's untenable what's happening. Talked about it in Sunday View. Talked about it. We saw Chris Bryant MP last week. Even Chris Bryant, and he's an arsehole, Labour MP, proper arsehole, but let's give him his credit. He said it is very, very worrying that politicians now realise that they can make a Facebook video or an Instagram video and put it out there, and it can be watched by those who support them. And then they can tell the broadcast journalists, no, I'm not speaking to you. If you want to grab something from my previously made Instagram video, do. But I'm not coming on your programme. I can reach more people by doing it my way. Yes, but that's a one-way fucking conversation, isn't it? Yes, Chris Bryant gets to go on Facebook and tell you how shit the Tories are, and they fucking are shit. But so are you, Chris. But it's a one-way conversation. The fucking arsehole watching Chris Bryant on one of these, he doesn't get to ask him a question. He doesn't get to say, hang on a second, Chris, I'm pretty sure what you just said 30 seconds ago is untrue. Never seen anything like what's happened to the media landscape in the last 3 years even. It's incredible. Media, independent media, genuine from the fucking soul, from the heart, media, objective, independent, decent, that wants to get to the truth, is being destroyed. It's being destroyed across the board. Incredible. So good for the Koonsberg woman and Peston and those who said, no, we're not fucking having it. The Daily Mirror should be here. The iPaper should be here. And the HuffPost should be, as bad as they fucking are. Because all they do is perpetuate the myth that there is a choice. We know it's a fucking myth, but we can't allow the tyrants, the dictators, get rid of the fucking print media. We can't have it. That's our print media. It's shit, and it's mostly worthless and fucking wretched, but it's ours. We pay for it. I pay for it. I subscribe to the Telegraph. I subscribe to the fucking Times for this programme. And I send a donation to the Guardian. As bad as it fucking is. Because for every 500 shit fucking identity politics story, there's always one bit of brilliant journalism in there. Same with the Mail. How dare they exclude people from briefings? How dare they say we're not going to go on national radio and be scrutinised to have their monumental bollocks questioned? How fucking dare they? But this is what's happening. And I told you, and I told you before anybody else told you, they're giving them their own fucking radio programmes now. Imagine, imagine! Giving people like Jacob Rees-Mogg and Nigel Farage a fucking radio show. Imagine that. Who would have believed it? But that's where we are. Who's standing up to that? I'd love to get the biggest fucking fire engine in the world. A big fantasy fire engine. 7 stories fucking tall. And 5 streets wide. With 500 million gallons of water in it. And I'd love to go down to LBC and hose that fat fucking Nick Ferrari. And every one of them, James, whatever his name is, the fucking London School of Economics dickhead who presents in the mid-morning, hose them all out of there. Fake fucking journalists. Putting Nigel Farage on the air, Jacob Rees-Mogg, it's a joke, isn't it? Isn't it? Imagine. Giving gatekeepers radio programmes to vomit forth their propaganda unimpeded by any sort of rigorous examination. It's amazing. Fuck, like, right? We're back to Frank Grimes and The Simpsons, right? What? What the fuck? And yet it's going on. And you have that other fat, straw-haired fucking twat Boris Johnson, huh? 50-pound note burner in front of homeless people, telling journalists through his communications director, you're not coming in here to ask questions. Crazy times. The Sun. What do you know? Barry Moore talked about this yesterday. We won't go into it. The programme is on Channel 4 at 9 o'clock on Thursday night. Poor bastard was brought back to a party at Michael Barrymore's house, a young man called Stuart Lubbock, and he was horrifically sexually assaulted. His anal injuries were beyond anything the fucking coroner had ever seen. Found floating face down in a swimming pool belonging to Barrymore, and nobody's ever been held accountable for it. Shocking. God love that man's father, who's in a care home now, battling for justice for years. Barrymore just won't say anything other than, I didn't do it. And he might not have done it, but there were lots of people at that pool party. Somebody stuck things in that man's rectum, tortured him and fucking killed him in some sick depraved game, and he died, and nobody has been held accountable for it. But now detectives reckon they can prove he was fucking murdered, at least by misadventure. And I hope that poor fucker, that father of his in a care home, I hope he gets some satisfaction. About time somebody went to jail for that. The Star, drunk but no kisses. Who gives a shit? Right, let's get rid of that. Lovely. Good morning, by the way. Jean-Anne sent me an email. I got it just before I came on air. Thanks, Jean-Anne. I don't even know if Jean-Anne is watching this garbage. Today, but I did get it. I was going to cover it anyway, very briefly. Bit of a momentous moment in the history of Irish politics, because in a poll done at the weekend in Ireland, which goes to the polls in a few days, general election in Ireland in a few days, incredibly. The latest poll shows that Sinn Féin is the most popular political party in the country. There's Mary Lou McDonald. Hello, Mary Lou. She's Sinn Féin's president, isn't she? In Ireland. And they're polling very well, Sinn Féin. You can just about see the poll there. I've left out Labour, not deliberately. It just cuts off there. Labour are on 4%. Look at that. Sinn Féin, 25. Fianna Fáil, 23. Fine Gael, 20. 8%. I'm fucking blind, me. Hello, Mary Lou. Goodbye, heart. Where are we? Yeah. I'm all over the place this morning. Forgive me. Forgive me. That was the Greens. I had to do a double take there. I couldn't believe it was the Greens. The Greens are ahead of the Labour Party. 8% the Greens, Labour Party 4%. Jean Anne reckons this is down to the fact that young people in Ireland are not really aware of Sinn Féin's Republican, well, not Republican, but their connection to the IRA. I wouldn't just put it down to that. This is the sort of headline that I would have had a wet dream about when I was in my teens. I would have had a wet dream about Sinn Féin being the largest political party in terms of support in Ireland. Because I would have been a big supporter then of what I believed to be genuine socialist parties like Sinn Féin and the Socialist Workers' Party. It's who I would have voted for. Although nobody would have known that back in the day. Not because I was ashamed of it, but because I kept it to myself. Particularly when I was on the radio. So Jean-Anne might have a point. She's very clever. Is the Crowley woman, you know, the Crowley woman. I also put it down to the fact that Sinn Féin are totally fucking woke. They are woke to the bone these days. They love the vulnerable groups just as much as any other political party. So I don't know. I don't know. Sinn Féin isn't what Sinn Féin was. I have no idea. But there you are. It's interesting. There is no more pro-European Union party in Ireland than Sinn Féin, by the way. I know. Makes me sick. But there you are. What are you going to do? What are you going to do? You can be kicked out of a football match, which is bad enough. But you can also be arrested these days for homophobic gestures. Now, dear viewer, you mad fucker to be watching this garbage. What the fuck is a homophobic gesture? Help me out here. Homophobic songs. I can just about take. Even though I utterly and I totally reject the term homophobia. I think it's a ridiculous entry into our lexicon. It's a ridiculous entry in our dictionaries. Homophobic. It literally means that you're scared of gay people. Nobody is scared of gay people. I'm sure there are people who hate gay people. I'm sure there are people who hate gay people. They just don't like them. Nobody's scared of gay people. Gay people are no threat to anybody. We all know that. Gay men and women, no threat to anybody. They're in the rat race. They're on the hamster wheel. David Icke, the hamster wheel. Just like everybody else, they're no threat to anybody. I remember songs being sung when I used to go watch Man United back in the days when Eric Cantona was striding majestically across the Old Trafford hallowed turf. And songs used to be sung like, "He's French, he's gay, he's shagging David May, Cantona, Cantona." Now you couldn't sing that today without being turfed out of the ground and being arrested. This is totalitarianism on fucking steroids. And I know this because I genuinely do. Genuinely. Regularly. I poll the handful of gay men and women that I have known for many, many, many years. In the media. I regularly solicit their opinions. There's that word again, solicit. And I say, what do you think? And they just laugh. They are bemused. I asked a friend of mine in Ireland about this yesterday, a gay friend of mine who works in radio in Ireland today, a guy called Steve, he's a newsreader, lovely man. I said, "Steve, my gay friend, what the fuck is a homophobic gesture?" And Steve was damned if he knew. He's like, "I don't know, Rich, I've no fucking clue. I said, Steve, if you're at a fucking football ground and somebody is singing, he's French, he's gay, he's shagging David May Cantona, and Steve said, I'd probably be singing it myself. If I was supporting a football team other than Eric Cantona's. He said, it's all a bit scary, Richie. It's very scary. And he said, it does nobody any good. In fact, he said, Richie, it's counterproductive. If anything, it might encourage people to think that, you know, maybe there is some reason to be suspicious of gay people and to be disliking of them. But he's just fucking bemused. Another friend of mine, a girl called Carrie, even as a lesbian, she's been with the same woman for 40 years. She's an older lady. Carrie is like, what the fuck? These are dangerous times. I remember going to a football match at Wembley in 2013. Living in London, I was, with the future Mrs. A. And David Icke was shacked up in our spare room. And we socialised a lot, obviously. We went to see England play Germany in a friendly at Wembley. And we're sitting down. And I get a fucking nudge in the ribs. And it's Ike. It's Ikey. I said, what's up with you? He said, look at the big screens. And this is the first time we saw the big screens at football matches. The Jumbotron. They used to call them Jumbotrons. Jumbotrons. Advertising a text number. If you see or hear something that is homophobic or racist, text us. Text us. And somebody will come around and deal with it. And Ike says to me, look at the fucking... And I look up and I'm like, wow. There you go. Imagine it. Yeah. Great. This is where we are. Homophobic gesture. I'm absolutely in the dark about what amounts to being a homophobic gesture. So answers on a postcard, please, to bbg.co.uk, whatever the fuck. Mad. Big story today. Yeah, I'm aware that this does go out on Podomatic, so the silences, the pregnant pauses. People are so impatient today, they just turn it off. That's how fucked up in the head most people are now. They hear silence for 4 seconds. What's wrong? What's wrong? Nothing's wrong! Right. Where are we now? Where are we? Where are we? Where are we? Where are we? There you are. Look at that fucking idiot there, look. Boris Johnson considers ban on new hybrid cars by 2035. He's launching Climate Summit alongside Sir David Attenborough. This is quite extraordinary, really. This COP26, we've just had COP25, which was in Europe, wasn't it? If I remember correctly. COP26 is in Scotland. It's in Scotland next year. And they're already launching it. This bullshit. Any excuse to keep climate change in the news. He's going to launch it today. Standing alongside David Attenborough, who fucking knows everything, apparently. And they're going to ban the sale of new hybrid cars from 2035. But more importantly, they are going to consider banning the sale of petrol and diesel cars 5 years earlier than they had planned. So now they're going to enshrine in law, if they can, the banning of the sale of new diesel and petrol cars by 2035. Told you, nobody on planet Earth like the Irish to insert an expletive into a sentence. 2035. 2040 originally, now 2035. The Irish, who are woke to fuck, the Irish and the Danes and the Swedes, they're going to do it by 2030. Going to destroy the automotive industry. They're going to render millions of people out of work by saying no more new diesel or petrol cars. I'm not going to say any more. Because you know what the implications of it are, don't you? I'm sure you do. I wish the likes of Harriet Harman would just fuck off, you know. I've been led to believe by people who know more than I do. That's most people know more than I do. That breastfeeding is vitally important for the development of babies. Of course it is. It must be. It must be. There was a time when it seemed that there was an all-out attack on breastfeeding itself. Do you remember that? Back in the noughties. Lots of campaigns against breastfeeding. You had women who were discreetly breastfeeding in coffee shops sometimes, in restaurants sometimes. Nobody could see fuck all, really. You know, baby was hidden, you know, kind of a thing. People said that they were offended and it was vulgar. And then you covered it on commercial radio and you were very surprised at the amount of people who said that women shouldn't breastfeed. Formula is good and it's been developed and it's great and all this fucking shit. And then, obviously, breastfeeding is very important. They're going to allow female MPs to breastfeed during sittings of Parliament. There's a number of issues here, of course. Number of issues here. Too much to get into here about parenting and about where a child belongs. I believe a child belongs as close to its mother as it can possibly fucking get in the very, very, very early weeks and months of its life, and that the mother shouldn't be in a work environment. The focus should be on the baby. No, ladies, that isn't code for get back to the fucking kitchen sink where you belong. It's just common sense. Nature. Nurture. Weaning. Nursing. Right? That's all been fucking perverted and destroyed as well over the years. You know? Stay at home. Raise the child. There isn't a more important job in the world than that. You know? Working for a corporation. Sitting behind a computer all day fucking long. How could that be worthwhile, love? I don't give a fuck how much it pays you. You'll never have a more important job than caring for your baby. In my opinion. Very old fashioned. What else have we got for you? Children are just fucked. Half of 10-year-olds own a smartphone. Excuse me. There's a graph. This is bbc.co.uk. This is very dispiriting, actually. Isn't it? They're fucked children, aren't they? The worst part of this is, of course, is not just what the devices are physically doing to the children, but also it's about narrowing the child's field of vision, narrowing the child's experience, narrowing the child's exposure to, well, to everything, to every type of person, to every type of opinion, to different viewpoints, to different narratives. It's all about tunneling, creating a very small space and saying, there, you operate from there, from that tiny space there. And it's so perfect and wonderful and malevolent and brilliant and genius at the same time because it's invisible. Amazing. Get you all into one place. It's beautiful. It doesn't matter what the device is. Whether it's Sony, whether it's Samsung, whether it's iPhone, whether it's whatever, it doesn't matter. They're all hooked up to Google Play, to Google Shop, to Google search engines, and that's where your kids are spending all their time. The pacifier for the 21st century. Children are acting up, give them a phone. Kids are getting antsy, they're looking a bit restless, Don't take them out to a park. Don't go and throw a ball for them. Don't go and play baseball. Don't go and play soccer. Don't get a hurley and go and get a slitter and play hurling with them. No, give them a phone. Shut them up. Shut them fucking right up. There you are. Shut up. Whereas previously, your parents would have had to tire you out, which is a great thing. Get them outside. Kick a fucking ball with them. Get her outside. Get her running around. Get a swing. Make a swing in the tree. Get them fucking playing, running around like loonies, which is what they're supposed to do, until they drop dead from exhaustion, and then put them to bed and you and I'll have a glass of fucking red wine. That's how it used to be. Not now. Give them a smartphone. Shut them up. This really pissed me off today. Daily Mail. Councils are fed up with flight dippers, are they? Acting with impunity. And the councils are fighting back by sharing photos of the people that they most want to identify. This is fucking typical of bad journalism. I praise the Mail occasionally for its work on things like fake chemical attacks in Syria. Peter Hitchens. Excuse me. Oh, Jesus. Oh. Oh, fuck. Not getting much sleep, you see. Not that I ever did anyway. Number of people are asking me, quite rightly, pointing out quite rightly that I don't have any children and what the fuck would I know about it? Well, I used to be a child. I've grown up with people and I have friends who do have children. I've observed children and I know what children used to do when I was a child. We used to run around like lunatics until we dropped fucking down from sheer exhaustion. And we did that with other children. Unsupervised, largely. And we didn't spend all of our fucking time looking at a gadget that is physiologically transforming our brains, rewiring our brains, and also programming us what to think. What is okay to think and what isn't okay to think. So I think I can speak to that without having children myself. But yes, point taken, I don't have children. I'd be a terrific father, I think. I'm going to go all Donald Trump. I'd be a great dad. I'd be a great dad. The best. I'd be the best. Right. So there they are. Look. Now, I'll tell you why I think this is piss poor journalism. It's because the Mail is allowing UK councils to get away with posting people in public places. Yes, that is wrong. Yes, that isn't nice. But of course, the real issue is that in places like Salford, I can't believe they get away with this, by the way, the whoring, bastarding fucking council only collects non-recyclable waste, that means your black bin, every 3 fucking weeks. Now, let's get back to that bit about me and her indoors not having any children. There are 2 of us, just the 2 of us. We can make it if we try, just the 2 of us, with 2 crazy fucking dogs. What we find is our black bin, even though we diligently and conscientiously recycle, not because of the little prophetess of fucking doom, Greta the arse banded fucking arsehole Thunberg, not because we're all going to die if we don't. We recycle because it's just the right fucking thing to do. Put your food over there. Put the shit from the garden in there. Put the aluminium cans in there. Yes! And yet still, the non-recyclable waste is difficult to store. So imagine if you've got 2 or 3 children. People are being driven mad by the fact that they can't fit their non-recyclable waste into their bins. They are driven even further down the recesses of madness. down the dark passages of fucking insanity. When the council rocks up 3 weeks on a Thursday every 3 weeks and doesn't take their non-recyclable waste because the bin is overflowing. This is what the whoring, bastarding, motherfucking councils are doing to people. And then they cry about fly tipping. And yes, those two fucking scallies there, those two chavs, totally chavtastic, right, are in the wrong. But the vast majority of people who are running out of their fucking houses with nowhere to put their fucking black bins are not doing it because they are disgusting people who care nothing about their neighbours. They can't go to the local tip, local dump, because the dumps, the tips, have now started to introduce charges. Whereas once you could go to the tip, with your excess waste, get out of your car and put it in one of the big, 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 massive fucking bins there. Now, increasingly, they're asking you for money. People pay council tax, which rises on average by 3 to 4% a year. People pay 14 to 1500 pounds a year council tax, which they can't afford. And I'm going to use a very bad, no, I'm not going to use a very bad word. I'm not. They get nothing in return for it. Council tax is taxation without representation. It is taxation for existing. You live in this area. We have the jurisdiction for this area, so you will pay us an annual tax. It's gangsterism. They don't do anything in return for it. Don't even start with collecting bins. They don't do that anyway anymore. Every 3 weeks for your non-recyclable waste. What the fuck, right? And they get away with it because people don't come together to stand up to it. We've never been more separated, people, along the lines of identity politics. We don't do anything about it. It would only take in Salford, which is a very big city in Greater Manchester. When I say very big city, it's not a very big city, but it's sprawling. There are many people who live here, hundreds of thousands. It would only take 1,000 households to wheel their black non-recyclable waste wheelie bins to the door of Salford Town Council and dump that fucking shit all over the fucking floor there and say, we're coming back to do it again next week and again. And next time we come, we'll be 1,000 stronger until you start collecting our refuse every week like it used to be. But people don't stand together because people don't care about each other anymore. They don't give a fuck. Community is a, well, it's a cliche. There is no community. And I'm not going to flog that old fucking horse because I've done it to death on the radio show. So that's it. Get out of here. I'll see you at 5 o'clock. I've gone on far too long today on the radio show. 5 o'clock UK time. Until then, have a good rest of your Tuesday. Bye now.